Hello and welcome to a True Blue LA podcast about spring training. That's what we got. That's what we got on the slate, Eric.
Here's the deal. I'm glad we're recording more often now because, A, it means that there's a baseball season and there's more to talk about. But also, recording every week, there's not always, like, news. We have some news this week, but it's like, it's been more of a challenge coming up with actual podcast fodder, but I think we have something interesting coming this week.
Yeah, no, it'll be good. It's well positioned with where you and I are. We'll talk about what that is. We will catch up on the news, and then we've got the standard. You know, we've got the Dodgers Rewind. We have questions from Craig. All of that after this. I think we should probably catch up on news before we dive into sort of spring training knowledge.
So, yeah, like this spring is weird in that it was already like fragmented a little bit because originally the AAA schedule was going to start in April, like right around a few days after the Major League schedule. So essentially spring training was sort of limited to, or not fully limited, but like essentially AAA and majors guys. There's prospects too, but like and then actual minor league camp is going to start in April. And so in preparation for May for like the rest of everybody. There's usually like minor league games going on around this time concurrently. And so it's, you get more of a flow of roster moves. But now like with no actual minor league camp, that people were like hesitant to like call people down. Plus the Dodgers, like, they started camp with, they had like 73 players in camp, and that's like 10 more than they usually have, I think, in a normal year. And Dave Roberts for about a week, I would always ask, I was the one who asked a lot on this, but like other people did too, like, hey, when are roster moves coming? Like, what are the, how does that even work? Because they are going to actually play games on the other side, but it was like getting that sort of sorted out. But he's like, yeah, we're gonna cut a significant number of people, like trim the room, all this stuff. But then like just seeing it in play was a significant number. They cut 28 players on Monday. Like that's a huge number. I don't think there was anyone like that you expected, but like, so, or didn't expect. The funny thing was, so I initially saw before the Dodgers announced the actual moves, I saw the revised roster. So I had like already sort of pre-written a post and like had a lot of the names in there, and I just wanted to make sure I had it right. So I was like, okay, there's 27 names, but here's how weird the spring is. Well, A, I'm not there, but like one of the players they cut was a non-roster player, shortstop Leonel Valera, who was signed out of Venezuela in 2015. I think he's 21 right now. But, like, I didn't even know he was in camp. Like, so, and he also had not appeared in a game. A few of the people who were cut had not appeared in any games. It's been that kind of a spring. The ones notable that were optioned, Alex Vesia, one of the left-handed relievers who's on the 40-man, he was option. I only note that because, Jacob, you had him on your opening day roster.
I'm not giving up hope.
Technically someone could get hurt and he can come back, but otherwise... Yeah. But I will say also, I think, I don't remember if we talked about this last week, but I think we both whiffed by not including Jimmy Nelson. He's looked great so far, and he's a non-roster guy, but... I think it's pretty clear at this point that he's probably going to be on the roster, even if he's not starting, even if he's one of the like 7 to 8 starting pitchers they carry to open the year. So like it's going to be a weird roster, I think. But anyway, the other I would say notable person that was cut was probably Keber Ruiz, but it's also, he was late to camp. He had only because of visa issues, he had only just played in like 2 games over the weekend as a catcher in reserve, so like he needs to play anyway, so he'll play on the other side. for now. And, like, Austin Barnes and Will Smith have been catching, at least starting the game. So, like, that's why that was. It's not, like, a big deal. That's a lot of moves, like, in one fell swoop, I guess.
Yeah, we're definitely at that part of spring training where these were... It just feels weird, right? Where when we would do sort of weekly on spring training, it would always be these more like eight players at a time, mm-hmm. and figuring out, reading the tea leaves on why, who or whomever got sent first. So, but it makes sense that they just kind of batched it at once.
Yeah, some of the like Bobby Miller, Landon Knack, they might have been like the draft picks from last year. They might have been sent to the other side earlier, had like a camp already been started. But yeah, who knows? So the other thing that was weird, speaking of the weirdness, like, so they had the Dodgers, every team has two off days this spring, both Arizona and Florida, because there's no split squad days because of health and safety this year. So that means with 15 teams in Arizona and 15 teams in Arizona, that someone's off every day. So every team has two scheduled off days. And the Dodgers had an off day. So to keep Trevor Bauer on schedule, I did not include this in the notes, but I just remembered it, one of the things I wanted to mention. Clayton Kershaw is going to start opening day. That's the one thing we know.
Mm-hmm.
And so the order had been in camp so far, like Kershaw, Bauer, Bueller. And then sort of to keep Bauer roughly on schedule, like yesterday's game was Kershaw for four and then Bauer came in after for five. So like that was a little bit of a weird quirk thing, but it just sort of happens that way. Bueller's going today. The Dodgers have not said who's starting after Kershaw yet, but Kershaw, it'll be his ninth opening day. Last year was going to be his ninth opening day, but he had a back tightness and was placed on the DL in that first game and Dustin May started. He also was on the DL to start 2019, but otherwise had started eight straight opening days from 2011 to 2018. That's the most in Dodgers history. But so the other like sort of news, I guess, of the last week or so, Cody Bellinger is in fact back. He's been like slowly but surely getting there, playing in a few like simulated games. And then he actually played center field also on Tuesday. And batted three times. He was 0-for-3 with a strikeout. He played six innings in center field. The most notable thing was he had a new he has a new batting stance a little bit. He's a little bit more open. Joe Davis, he wasn't calling the game, but he noticed it on Twitter. He said he described it. I thought this was good. Is like he was so closed off last year that like if you're looking from like the center field camera, you could almost see his number 35 on his back. Mm-hmm. And like now, like it's a little more open. And so so yesterday, they asked, Bellinger, like what prompted him to do, or who did he like talk to or consult, I guess, to make the stance change. And he said myself, which is hilarious. It's getting more and more like I said, we're recording this on the 17th, St. Patrick's Day. I am not wearing green, so I apologize. But we're like, you know, we're 2 weeks and a day from opening day right now. So
that's weird.
Yeah, and so like it's the weird time of spring where it feels like spring training has gone on forever. And it also feels like opening day is still a long ways off, but actually it's not. It's like 2 weeks off, so like maybe it's getting there. I don't know. It's weird. Time is an artificial construct anyway, but the other sort of notable thing yesterday, I have not read this fully yet. It's an expansive profile, but Mookie Betts has – there's an article on Mookie Betts in GQ – and man, like some of the, you know, they always show like the shirts, or like the clothes that people are wearing in like the caption,
regular GQ reader, I assume.
Right.
It shows,
I mean, look, we all know I'm nothing but a gentleman. And I only read things once a quarter, so it's perfect. But they always list like the prices of the things they're wearing, and I just remember what I was just I randomly looked on one of the pictures, and it was like shirt $975, and I'm like, my entire like wardrobe doesn't is like that pretty much, I think, at this point. But anyway, the part that I did read, there was a thing, I didn't get deep into the article yet, but I noticed this, which was pretty great. There was a point like in the playoffs last year, if you remember the setup of Globe Life Field, there's a lot of like open area, like sort of underneath the seats, but it's like a place, I guess, for like high priced seats slash, but it's like very informal. Like there's tables and, things set up like along the side with like a open fencing to, you know, so you're like up close, but you're like right on the field, you know, there. And that's where all the players' families were last year in when they were in the quote unquote bubble. So like all the Dodger wives and girlfriends and children were in this area on the first base side. And then on the third base side was the road team. At some point, I didn't get exactly when this was, but like, I guess Mookie, like during the games, like, would be like talking to his now fiance and his daughter, from right field, and just like carrying on like a conversation. And it got to the point where like George Lombard, first base coach, was like, "Hey man, focus up. We got to get this." And he's like, "No, this helps me." And so the Betts quote in the article was, "The more I can let my mind wander, the more I can bring it back and focus on each pitch, each play, each inning. If you tell me to lock in the whole time, then I'm going to be awful. I just can't do it." And I thought that was important because, like, you know, you always hear like, you know, I don't know, people are human, right? That's like, that sounds like a very grounded thing to say, as opposed to like the rote sort of, you know, always focus, you know, be at your best 100% of the time. That's just not how things work. So it was sort of refreshing to hear him like say that. And it turns out he did pretty well in the postseason. I don't know if you remember. So I say let him keep talking. That's I'm okay with it. Pitchers are batting again. It just started yesterday. Both Kershaw and Bauer batted once in the game. Actually, Walker Buehler's pitching today. They are using a DH today, though, but I think part of that is they are playing the White Sox, and the White Sox are the home team today at Camelback. So I think that's part of it. But for the most part, pitchers are going to be hitting now, because that's what's going to happen during the regular season. Kershaw actually got a single. The other thing about Kershaw, I forgot to note this. We're going to get into some weird spring stats shortly. But one of the weird things, we're going to do mostly offense, but one of the weird things I noted through like two starts this year, Kershaw had not given up a spring run since like 2017. And it went back, it was like 9 starts and I believe 30 innings in between when he gave up runs. He ended up giving up a home run a couple starts ago, and then yesterday he gave up home runs to his first 2 hitters, and then he gave up 5 runs overall. Was not very good, but it was just one of those weird things. I remember looking at this and I was like, my goodness. Like, part of it was he was, 2019 he was hurt, and he actually did not pitch in a Cactus League game that year, so that was part of it. 2018 he was limited in Cactus League, and he was, 2018 he had like 6 starts and like gave up nothing, no runs. And then, he had this like long streak of like not giving up a spring run. It was just a very weird quirk. So like those are like the weird sort of things. The other like newsy type stuff. So like Bruiser Gratterall and Joe Kelly still haven't faced live hitters yet. They've been like, they're on a slow like throwing program. And it's every time we sort of ask about it, it's like, well, you know, they'll throw another bullpen like in a few days, and then if that works out well, they might face live hitters, and then if that works out well, then it becomes a ways before they can get into a game. So I think we're at the point now where, like, you can't really count on them for opening day. I know we didn't account for injuries in our opening day roster. Both of us had Gratterall and Kelly in on the opening day roster. So I think that's very much in doubt right now. But yeah, so the other thing is Brandon Morrow. I think we already knew this. I don't remember if we brought it up on the podcast. He has also not pitched yet, and he's not going to pitch in a spring game. His throwing program is even slower than Gratterall and Kelly. Morrow has not pitched since 2018 in a major league game. So, like, their main thing with him is just make sure he's, like, healthy long term. So who knows what his timetable is going to be, but he's not going to be – he's on a minor league contract anyway. But so he's not going to be – even if he were to, like, make the team, it's not going to happen opening day. It'll be, if you know, maybe later in the year. So that's sort of where we're at, like, injury wise, news wise. But yeah, let's talk a little bit about the spring. How, you said you have not watched.
I started off. I watched the first five or six games, and then my mother-in-law came and stayed with us, and so I've kind of been using that time to catch up on chores, catch up on work, catch up on sleep, and just generally spend time with family. So I have not watched the last, whatever that is, week and a half or two. So I actually will be, these will be stone cold guesses of the questions here. And I guess not stone, I have a little bit of data, but.
You have a newborn in the house. So like this is, you know, you're occupied at this
point.
Well,
what's
like,
funny is if my mother-in-law hasn't come visited, I would actually probably have watched almost every game because I'm the parent on duty during the day. And so putting on a baseball game is a really good thing to do when I have to like parent and watch the child and read to her, but have something on in the background. Whereas when my mother-in-law is here, I'm using that. I was sleeping, I was working, I was doing all sorts of stuff, and then hanging out with my daughter more in the evening.
Corey Seager, I think, has been the star of spring so far, just like he was last October and for a good chunk of the season, too. Dave Roberts said he picked up right where he left off last year. He had a stretch where he homered five times in six games. He's 12 for 26. He's hitting .462. So there's a couple things here. I went back and looked at some of the like offensive standouts of the last 8 years of like the Dodgers winning the division and like what happened during spring. So since 2013, do you know who has the most home runs in a single spring training by a Dodger? Keep in mind, Corey Seager right now has five.
Is it Puig?
No, Puig had five once in 2015. There are a few people with more.
Justin Turner.
No.
Hmm.
His most is also five.
All right, I'm going to my well list.
I'll give you one hint. Both players are no longer Dodgers.
That's not much of a hint, is it?
Both players are very recently no longer Dodgers.
Jock Peterson.
Yes.
Kike Hernandez. So he hit,
yes.
Yeah.
That's right. That's the easiest hint ever. So 2015 and 17, Jock Peterson had six home runs. Also in 2015, Kike had six home runs. So,
interesting.
Yeah. Now, the other thing, so Seager is hitting .462. There are actually three other Dodgers this spring hitting .400.
Uh-huh.
Or more, in at least five at bats. I will tell you, one of them is exactly five at bats. He's 2 for 5. Do you know any of the three?
This is so like, what names do I like? Do I just guess the obvious? But it feels like it's a spring 20, so I'm gonna guess more odd names. How about McKinstry?
That's actually right.
Yeah,
he's 8 for 19. He's hitting .421.
I'm hot. Do I just tap out now? Yeah, I'm just. That's it. I'm gonna quit while I'm ahead.
So the other one that's notable, I would say, is Gavin Lux.
Ah, on my list, on my little, on my little list.
417. The other one is Cody Hosey. He's the 2 for 5. So the thing with what brought this to my attention, I was trying to figure out, like, when I texted you last week at some point, like, we should go over, like, weird spring stuff. It was because of, like, games played at that point. Like, James Outman was, like, leading the Dodgers in games played. Right now he's actually one behind the team lead. He was one of the guys cut, but he also played both games after getting cut. So, like, that, this is the way it happens. Like, players join for the day on the major league side. So Seager has played in 12 of the 16 games. That's the same number as James Outman. Do you have an idea who leads the Dodgers in games played
now? I think you texted me this when we were talking. So I think it's DJ Peters.
I don't think I did text you that. Did I?
You did.
Oh, anyway. Okay. Well, then that's terrible. So yeah, he has played in 13 games. He's actually starting again today. Andy Burns is another 12-game player, and Sheldon Noisy has played in 12. But what brought this to my attention, why I thought this would be fun, prior years, do you just want to, like, I'll tell you this, three people, uh-huh. Some spring, like, so 2014, they went to Australia, so spring was cut short. So most springs, like, are, you're not going to get this many games. Like, this year, I believe the Dodgers are playing 29 games, spring games. So they actually cannot get to this number. Three Dodgers since 2013 have played in 30 spring games. Let's see. I'm trying to think. At least, I don't remember. I would say one of them. Hold on. I'm going to get you a good hint here.
Oh, no. See, when you give me good hints, then the expectation that I get it right goes up. Pressure is real.
All right. And nope, that is not what I expected. Okay, so two of these players had not yet made their Major League debut.
Okay.
But would later that year.
Okay.
So the number of games is 30.
All right, let's go. I'm writing a few names down on who I'm going to guess. Yeah, I have the three I'm going to guess. Puig.
Mm-hmm. No, and I'm looking, I think he was like in the 27 range or something like that. I didn't write him on my list, but mostly because it was like, it wasn't the leader, so I didn't put him on there.
Cody Thomas.
Oh man. No.
Okay.
You know what? He may have led the team in games last year, but like, no, not last year, in 2019. But like, so one of the years, in fact, no, okay, he actually hit 5 home runs last year, Cody Thomas, but like it was cut short. So like,
right.
he could have been up there like in a weird thing. But yeah, no, not on there.
All right, I'm adding a name. So I have two more guesses. Justin Turner.
No.
Wait, no. You gave me the major league hint. Sorry. The reason why I had crossed his name out. Matt Beattie.
No.
Okay. I see.
Okay. So the one who already had debuted for the Dodgers in 2012 and then played 30 games in 2013, Elian Herrera.
Okay.
And then recent acquisition in 2016 in the offseason, Rob Segedin. He would make his late major league debut in August.
That's a name that should have come back as like a Cane of Spring name for sure.
And then the one that has a little more staying power, who made his debut in April 2017, Cody Bellinger, 30 games in 2017.
Wow, I would not. Now, for some reason, I would not have. Like, I always feel like it's those quadruple A players that end up getting the 30 games, less or so the, like, a lot of, like, but, I guess in my mind, the prospects a lot of times like get a day off or something.
But also it was like for him, they had both the, okay, first base and outfield. So you know, like that's, they were, he was like backing up every day that he wasn't like starting, you know what I mean? Mm. Like, so that's how like James Outman has, well, also Bellinger was out, you know, for the majority of spring. So like they didn't even have a center fielder, like for the most part. So Peters and Outman have played a lot in center, even starting some games. So like that's how they've sort of racked up the playing time this year. So some of the other notables, Kike Hernandez in his first spring with the Dodgers, 29 games, same thing, played all over. Trace Thompson in 2016 played 29 games. Austin Barnes played 28 games in 2016.
That's, yeah. Catchers aren't supposed to. Was he, how many games were at catcher versus, did he play any second?
No, I have to look at the game logs, are very difficult to look up.
Sure.
He may have played some, but like, I think also, he was like backing up a lot then, because you know they
sure it still seems weird to me that they would get a
it was Grandal and Ellis, so like, you know, he's like backing up almost every day and like and plus playing some, you know, second base too, but yeah, that's hard to look up. The a couple other names who didn't, I believe these were either like top two or three on the depth chart, games they didn't necessarily lead. Although I think Mike Baxter actually led in 2014 with 23 games. That was the Australia year. The other 2019, Ezekiel Carrera came up 22 games.
Okay.
Tyler Holt in 2017 played 24 games. These are like the, oh, yeah, these guys were Dodgers. that's what I'd rather not. 2013, Alfredo Amezaga played 24 games. Mm-hmm. And then the immortal Okoye Dixon in 2017 played 25 games.
Oh, yeah.
I have another games person we'll get to a little bit later in the show.
All right.
So you brought up, rightfully so, Justin Turner.
Kept trying to go to that well.
So I actually wrote something before, mostly because I was looking up, I don't even remember what I was looking up, but I just stumbled across like his spring stats page, and I was like, "Good God!" Like, some of these numbers are outlandish, and so I looked as I wrote about it. I think I titled the article "Justin Turner, King of Spring," and he's actually relatively something this year. He has a 784 OPS so far. You know, it's early, whatever. He did hit a triple, though, the other day. That was his first ever spring training triple. His lowest OPS in the spring with the Dodgers is 970. that was in 2018 when he got hit by a pitch and cut short his spring, and then he ended up missing like the first 40 games, broke his wrist. He hit okay, so this is his eighth spring. In his first seven springs, he hit under 389 once. his overall numbers in spring, 349 plate appearances. He's hitting .412 with a .491 on base and .701 slugging. So like that, like that's what I was like looking at. I'm like, really? Holy crap. But he's hit 400 five of the 7 years, and then 500 once. He was 15 for 30. Okay, so I want to run through a couple of the 500 hitters here. This is since 2013. I want to, let's see. Yeah. All right. I'm going to leave off a couple because it's going to get to some questions for you. So the ones at the top, I set a minimum of five at bats for these, but like, so these are the highest four batting averages. I would not expect me to get this. I would not expect anyone to get this. I'm not asking. I'm just going to tell you.
Okay. I appreciate that.
Nate Sampson in 2015 was 4 for 5 in spring training. He hit .800. And I actually forgot. I didn't write this down in my notes, but I'm looking up
so
right
many
now
of these names sound like made up video game, like create a player.
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm.
You're playing the 2040 season, and they're just reusing hashes of names.
He was an infielder,
okay.
And came in like possibly a minor league trade, possibly a minor league free agent. Shortstop, second, third base. That's where he played. C.J. Rutherford, former Dodgers draft pick, was 5 for 8 in 2013. His main position was third base, if I remember correctly. Same for Paul Heneke in 2015, was 3 for 5. Also in 2016, Devin Ahart, an infielder. No, he was an outfielder, I believe. 3 for 5, hit 600. I just want to make sure. Yep, he was a center fielder. 16th round in 2014. All right. And then I guess another notable, K-Bur Ruiz in 2018 was 7 for 12. He hit 583. Sean Zaraga, another catcher, in 2016, you may remember him as the one day of service time in the majors, but never played in the game. In 2016, so when AJ Ellis was traded for Carlos Ruiz, the Dodgers had a game while they were waiting for Chooch to get to LA. They needed an extra catcher, so they called up Sean Zaraga, and then they designated him for assignment the next day when Ruiz got there. Zaraga did not play, but he got his day of major league service time. He was like celebrating in the dugout. That was very cool. But like, he never actually played in the majors. But in 2016 spring, he was 11 for 20. So he hit 550. Jacob Scavuzzo, an outfielder, was 4 for 8 in 2016. Andre Ethier in his last year, 2017, also injured most of spring, but he was 6 for 12. But here's some of Justin Turner's batting averages. 2016, 500, 15 for 30. 2020, last year, 9 for 19, 474. 2020. 2019, 21 for 46. That's a lot. 457. 21 for 49 in 2015, 429. And then 23 for 55, 418. So those last 3 years I mentioned, those are three of the five highest hit totals for in the last 8 years for the Dodgers in the spring. Do you want to wait? Is this the part where I? Oh no, I'll tell you. I'm not going to tell you the top one because we're going to talk about him in a second. But can you name the other person in that top five list?
Puig.
Puig is the one we'll talk about in a second.
Okay,
We've talked about this person already.
Man, we talked about a lot of players already. Segedin?
No, Jock Peterson, 2015.
I was going to go to that. Well,
22 hits.
I'm looking at the next career coach, but one after, by the way, which is going to be really similar. I'm going to name Dodger players.
Yeah.
Or reason on who to guess.
I will tell you this. You're not going to get this next question.
Oh, good.
So Yasiel Puig, who you brought up, so Turner had 23 hits in 2017. That was his most in a spring. Yasiel Puig in 2013 had 30 hits. Like, nobody else is even close to that in the last 8 years. So that was the year. So Puig was 30 for 58. That was his first spring. He hit 517. That was the year where we brought this up so many times, but someone asked Don Mattingly, like, how can you send a guy like that down? And he's like, well, I usually just tell him. And then he ended up starting the year in the minors. Then he set the world on fire in June when he came up. But that spring, the Dodgers also had another player hit 517. Now, Puig was 30 for 58. This person was 15 for 29. Do you know them?
No.
So it's actually Brian Barden.
Yo, okay.
It's go. B-A-R-D-N. So the reason, in my head, I was like, that's like a sort of familiar name, but I was thinking it was Brian Barton, who I believe like had, did he have like a physics degree or something? He's from LA, and an outfielder. Brian Barden, this player, is a third baseman, who was a non-roster invitee, and he was 15 for 29. He did not make the team. But yeah, so like that was a very weird spring.
I really hope Craig's trivia question for you is hard. This is hard.
Yeah.
I'm being lambasted here.
So my actual trivia question for you is this. Since 2013, which Dodger has scored the most runs in a single spring?
I will guess some name after this. Since 2013, which Dodger has scored the most runs in a single spring? Is it our Dodgers rewind?
No.
I was hoping you would give me, you know, give me that. And is it a name we've talked? Have we already talked about this player?
Yeah, this should be something you should get, actually.
No, don't tell me that. Well, since we talked a gazillion about him, I will lead with Justin Turner.
So he's close. Turner was one behind.
No.
He scored 15 runs in 2019.
Is it Jock Peterson?
He scored 14 runs in 2015.
I'm going to guess one more name that we've talked about already, and then I'm tapping out. Kike Hernandez.
No. You think of the guy who got 30 hits. And it's Yasiel Puig.
he scored the four names I keep bringing up, and like I keep screwing up not bringing up the right
name. he scored 16 runs in 2013.
Did you purposely, because on our show notes, the Puig segment is right next to trivia question, did you purposely do that so I wouldn't guess Puig? Because if so, success. No way he did that.
I actually purposely did it because it flowed better. I was like, why don't I just ask a Puig question right after this? Like,
thanks, friend.
But the other, so Chase Utley was close. He scored 15 runs in 2017. Mm. So, but okay, so that's our that was my
Jacob
fun
says
question.
Dodger players segment.
Yeah. That now. Speaking of like spring stats, the one name I didn't bring up in this, the players who have played massive amounts of spring games, was Alex Castellanos. Uh-huh. He was our Dodgers rewind today. He played 29 games in 2013 spring training. The Dodgers acquired Castellanos, sort of a utility man, from the Cardinals in 2011 for Rafael Furcal. Dodgers were bad in 2011. They didn't make the playoffs. They ended the year strong, but they were under 500 for a good chunk of it. And then he ended up making his major league debut on May 31st, 2012. He was hit by a pitch in his first major league plate appearance. I'm going to get to that a little bit. So on the last day of 2012, he hit his first major league home run against Gene Machi of the Giants. I remember this because at the end of the game, Castellanos got the ball back because the fan who caught it, like, they brought him down to the clubhouse and they traded an autographed bat for the ball. So I thought that was kind of cool. Castellanos played the games in spring training in 2013. He played overall 24 games for the Dodgers in 2012 and 13 total. He started 8 times, 4 each in right field and left field. He did not hit well at all. 171, 186, 390. That's a 56 OPS plus in 43 plate appearances. I was almost going to ask you this, but there's no way you would have ever gotten it. And so it was like even more cruel for me, like, to not do this. But Castellanos never walked as a Dodger. So in 43 plate appearances, I was going to ask you who has the most by a non-pitcher plate appearances without a walk. So, but I'll just tell you the two people that have the most are 94 plate appearances without a walk. Overton Tremper, who is a left fielder, and Joe Dunn, who is a catcher. Joe Dunn, 1908, 1909. Overton Tremper, as you might imagine, also a long time ago, 1927 and 1928. A notable recent name, Sandy Alomar, Jr., 62 plate appearances in 2006, and he did not walk. So yeah, Castellanos is in that group. And then, in October 2013, the Dodgers traded, Castellanos to Boston for Jeremy Hazelbaker, an outfielder who was not on the 40-man roster. And then Castellanos actually never Never played in the majors again. He did play four more years in AAA. In 2018, he played in indie ball. But yeah, back to Castellanos' debut. He was hit by a pitch in his major league, his first major league plate appearance. Now, I can't say for certain this is a full list of players who were hit by a pitch in their first plate appearance with the Dodgers, but it's people who were hit by a pitch in their first major league game with the Dodgers.
Okay.
So, like, you know, like some player, like, let's say, like, this always came up, what was it, before Keber Ruiz, Gary Ingram was the last Dodger to homer in his first major league at bat. But, like, his first major league game was, like, I think pinch running, and he never batted. So, like, if you do a search just for that, he would never come up. So, but this, I'm just saying, this search is, there's at least six other Dodgers who've been hit by a pitch in their first major league plate appearances. How many can you name?
None. What is this ridiculous question?
I'll give you some hints. I'll say, okay, one of the players is a Hall of Famer.
Okay.
One of the players, you've attended games that he's started.
Okay.
One of the players was a Dodgers Rewind last week.
Oh, no. I can't remember a week ago.
Yeah.
So that's three. You got heads for the other ones, but you're just... No. You're gonna...
One of the players has a memorable line in Moneyball.
Okay. So let's start Hall of Famer while I put this together. Duke Snyder.
No. Teammate of his though.
He has many Hall of Fame. Jackie.
Nope.
That would probably been more of a story, huh? Pee Wee Reese.
No. You're running Gilliam. Out of Hall of Famers.
Wait, not a Hall of Famer. Sorry, no, that's a retired number. Yeah. What? Don Drysdale.
No.
Sandy Koufax. God.
No.
Zach
no.
Wheat. I know it's not Zach Wheat. I'm just joking. this is good. It's good stuff.
I will tell you.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. Go, you got it.
Campy?
Roy Campanella. Okay. Yeah. I was about to give you a hint, another hint for him, but yeah.
No.
Do you know any of the other ones that I hinted you?
No. Just tell me. I'm embarrassed. Okay. I'm going to go home.
Last week's Dodgers Rewind was Norm Sherry, who passed away recently. Catcher, 1959. He was hit by a pitch in his first plate appearance. The Moneyball line was Ron Washington. He was hit by a pitch in 1977 with the Dodgers. Do you remember his line in Moneyball?
I don't, actually.
He was the coach, and it might be apocryphal, but like when they were trying to get Scott Hatteberg to play first base to get his bat into the lineup, and they asked him about like how difficult it was to like play first base, and Billy Beane goes, "Tell him, Wash," and he goes, "It's incredibly hard about playing first base." I don't know. You had to be there anyway.
So wasn't Dodgers Rewind last week Steve Yeager?
Was it?
Yeah.
Then 2 weeks ago. Look,
I'm just happy. I can't remember last week. I wasn't joking, so I'm just happy. I looked it up.
We no concept of time.
2 weeks ago was Stan Williams, by the way. That's who I actually thought was last week, for what it's worth.
Wait, why did I? So we haven't talked about Norm R.I.P. Norm Sherry then. God damn it. All right.
You have this made-up episode of the podcast.
Yeah, that's right. It's the lost episode. Yeah, we recorded it. No. Okay, that's funny. The other more recent one, Chad Billingsley, 2006. He got hit by a pitch in his first at bat or first plate appearance, and then singled later. He drove in two runs. I believe it was a teardrop single in right. That was in San Diego. So the reason I said at least six, Hal Gregg, 1943, also Andy High, who I believe was on our major league team, the One War guys, 1922. Now there's three other people that come up on this search who were hit by a pitch in their first game, but they played before Baseball Reference has full game log data. So I don't know if it was actually their first plate appearance. Ed McClain, Doc Riesling, which, come on, great name. And then Pat Diesel. Wow. Those guys played in the first decade of the 20th century. So, yeah, possibly they were hit by a pitch in their first plate appearance, but possibly not. But at the very least, hit by a pitch in their first major league game. So that was my very weird... That concludes my very weird and somewhat cruel trivia for you in this episode.
All right. Hey, there's a trivia question coming up for you in this next 6 minutes. So are you ready for it?
I have not looked at these. I copied the questions into the thing, but I did not read them. So I was purposely not paying attention so I could be surprised.
I really hope you get just embarrassed, which you won't because you're really smart. But it's time for...
With Dean and Craig. We love them.
All right, before your trivia question, Craig wants to know that I've mentioned that I'm a fan of 60s music, and he was wondering if there's a specific genre, British Invasion, Motown, Surfer Folk. No. I guess pop, like 60s pop, which has more, you know, there's girl pop, a lot of Motown girl pop wall sound stuff, but really all of it. Whatever KRF played when it was a good station, darn it. Maybe it's a fine station now, but it's not my KRF anymore.
I like them now, KRF now, because they play 80s a lot. So that's like my wheelhouse. So.
Yeah, he wants to meet me the name five songs that I could play over and over without skipping. There's so many I could list. That's one reason I love it is it's of genre or decades. Like if you're either, you know, if I'm a rental car with satellite radio or if I'm just on Apple Music looking for a playlist, 1960s is kind of the like nonstop hits. Like I almost never have to skip anything. So I really quickly started writing five things down and then it became eight, but real quick, Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, my favorite band until I was 13 or 14. It's too many hits to name, but I guess I'll have to pick one. So we'll say Let's Hang On to What We Got, Be My Baby by the Ronettes, a sort of obscure one, Hit Wonder, but recently got resurrected by one of the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtracks. I think the most recent one, Come a Little Bit Closer by Jay and the Americans. Mm-hmm. Picking a Roy Orbison song is too hard, but I will say Crying. And then how about... the Righteous Brothers, You've Lost That Loving Feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. Also, if you're a fan of 1960s music and you have not heard the somewhat obscure but recently-ish resurrected album Begin by The Millennium, which came out, I think, in 1969, it's really, really, really good, and you should listen to it. All right, now it's time. Back to trivia. Mookie Betts has scored 660 runs since he debuted in 2014. That is third in baseball since that time. Betts led the AL twice in runs scored. Here are the questions for Eric. Betts could be the third LA Dodger to lead the National League in runs. Can Eric name the other two? We'll start there.
Okay. Matt Kemp in 2011.
I'm pulling up the answers now.
And Dodgers and runs.
Here's a hint. And, I've seen this player live.
All right, and Maury Wills in 1962.
I just said I've seen this player live.
Oh, okay, the other one. I thought you were. I thought that was Kemp for you.
No. So the other player I've seen live.
Oh, okay. Is, oh man, NL and runs scored. Is it Bellinger?
Nope.
Sean Green?
Nope.
Sheffield?
Nope.
Furcal?
Nope.
Man,
this feels so good. This feels so good.
I'm stumped on this one.
My hint was purposely somewhat mean. It's Brett Butler, who I did see live, but I was seven or something. So
wait, 1991?
Yep.
Was that his year? Yeah, okay. That makes sense.
A Brooklyn Dodger led the league in runs scored three straight years. Can you name a player? Hint, it's not Zach Wheat.
but before I try to answer that, I will just say Brett Butler, 1991, my platonic ideal for a leadoff hitter.
Sure.
Like just, and even though I think that was the year he was caught 28 times while stealing 38 bases, but whatever, like who cares? Like all the other stuff was great. Okay. So Brooklyn Dodger leading the league in runs scored.
I have a hint if you need it. This is a good hint, I actually think.
So I'm just going to go with my gut on this one and say Jackie Robinson.
Nope. Your hint is he did not start his career with a hit by pitch, which isn't a hint. But
I was okay. So my other guess was going to be Duke Snider.
There you go.
So that's funny.
Four LA Dodgers have scored 120 more runs in a season. Maybe Betts can join this group. Can you name them? His hint is none of them led the league in runs that season.
Okay, so I believe Rafael Furcal was one.
Not on my list.
He's not on your list.
I'll figure out his career as a Dodger run total
for
you now.
Bellinger, pretty sure Bellinger did, 2019.
Yep.
I will say Maury Wills in 1962.
Don't have the year, but Maury Wills is one of them, yes. You've guessed one of these players already for a different question.
What? Okay.
So Rafael Furcal did have more than 120 runs, but it was as a Brave. His most as a Dodger was 113.
Oh, okay. So then that way, so Sean Green.
Yep.
Man. The other 120.
A hint for the last name, he's never been in my kitchen. Nor have I seen him play.
Is it Tommy Davis?
It is.
Nice.
All right. Good. You did pretty good. But I still got a little bit of my revenge, so I'm okay.
No. It was a solid mix of embarrassment slash
also names you could prowess. Guess hit by pitch. Yeah. Counting down to opening day, pick the winners of the AL and NL East and name any teams that you could any teams that you pick to win a wild card spot from those divisions.
Okay, so as it stands, there's only what, two wild cards? So, but it seems like that's going to happen. So for our purposes, I think anything counts. Like, so if we say a team's going to win the wild card and then they expand the playoffs, I think we get credit for it because why not?
Sure.
But we're just knowing that we're in a situation, in a world right now with only two wildcard spots in each league. I think in the AL East, I think the Yankees win it, and I think the Rays win a wild card spot.
Okay. I think the Yankees win it, and that's it.
Okay. Do you have an NL East pick?
Braves. And I will say the Mets make a wild card.
Okay. I also think the Braves are going to win.
What a good team. as we all found out in the playoffs last year.
Yep. I also think the Mets are going to win the World. That's, I don't want to be the same. So let's say no, I'd just rather be right. We'll both celebrate being right at the end. So, yeah.
All right. last week you both gave some of your favorite spring training memories. I'd like you each to name your favorite non-Camelback spring training ballpark, and it would be great if you had your reason had nothing to do with the game you saw there. Well, when it comes to picking ballparks, it has nothing to do with baseball. Food, that's not fair. Sightlines are important. You need a comfort level while you're in the same. But a lot of it is food when I pick a ballpark. Do you have a favorite? I think I have one. It's so kind of stock at this point, I think. But
yeah, I'll say my favorite spring ballpark, even including Camelback Ranch, yeah, is Salt River Fields.
Yep, that's what I was gonna say.
But in a weird way. So the weird part of it is that it's just wonderful. Like the sight lines, the view. The food is awesome. And then, but the video board is hilarious. And I remember when I first, took a shot of it, of the scoreboard from like afar, I remember the video board is like crystal clear, but also like when I took a shot of it there, they were just showing pictures of sausage on there. And like, it looks so appetizing. And like, so it, like, I always associate it with that. But my other answer is, from a personal memory, is Peoria, because so 2012 was the first year I started like doing this full time. I quit my day job. I put all of my stuff. I was living in the high desert. I put like all of my stuff in my apartment in a storage facility. I packed my car with like a bunch of stuff. I rented a room that I found on Craigslist for $700 for the 6 weeks. And just sight unseen, just not wise. You just don't really do that. But anyway, I just like packed everything up and went. I did all spring. I was applying for like daily credentials at the time. And then near the end of spring, it was like, okay, the season credentials are going to come up. I had no idea if I would even get approved for that and so like I applied, and then I was thinking I would have to do like daily credentials, which is a little bit more of a hassle in terms of like logistically sometimes. But it was near the end of spring training in 2012. It might have been on my birthday or possibly a few days before. But I was sitting in the Peoria press box and Joe Jarrick, one of the Dodgers PR people, came up to me and said I was approved for the season credential. So I literally almost cried. Sure. In that press box. So you're like, that was a very cool moment in the Peoria press box. So yeah, that's, I think I have some good memories
there. Just real quick, I actually really like Camelback, and I think that's unbiased because I have no nostalgia for the place, except for what is infamous for is, I hope you like staring in the sun. Night game, I think it's a great place for a night game, mm-hmm. but I hate staring in the sun, Frank McCourt.
Well, that's exactly right. But I would say, so your assessment of Camelback is like, you like Camelback, no shade. Is what you're saying, because they literally have like almost no shade at that ballpark. So a couple things they screwed up. I think everything would have been like almost perfect, like logistically for everything, had they just turned the ballpark around. Because as it stands, so the clubhouse is now, so the White Sox are in beyond right field, and the Dodgers are beyond left field, and that's where the bullpens are. And then that's how those teams get into the stadium on the backside. Had they just flipped it around, all the like the press box would have been out there. The same thing, they could have, you know, accessed the dugouts from there, like from the like clubhouse almost directly. Also, the stadium would not have been facing the sun, like, you know, or just the sight lines, the. Everything would have been like almost fixed, but I think it was like, I think when they originally built it, it was like they liked one of the views or something like at a certain time, and then like they didn't think of like ever adding like more shade. So just terrible.
Last
but a great facility. I do like
it. Yeah, I think that's good. The park has its issues, like you said, but the facility itself is great. Mm-hmm. I look for old pictures for a work event, and seen one from junior high, aka middle school. Reminds me of those monster sweet rolls they used to sell during the morning break. This week's question, was there any food item you thought was really good when you went to grammar, middle, or high school? We talked about this last week where my standard high school lunch was a bunch of crap. Shock Tarts and Doritos. but I do recall there were these sort of personal pizzas. This was in elementary school that you could buy from the cart. And they were different than Celeste pizzas, but that same idea where they were really bad, but really, really good.
Yeah.
And they were just expensive enough to where I didn't have enough like pocket change to buy one every day. So it always carried a sort of specialness. It's like, this is a pizza day that I can get.
So the one thing that stands out to me for this is probably in high school. And it was like, I want to say freshman and maybe sophomore year, and then they didn't do it after that. But we had like, it was right near the gymnasium where there was like a little room where they sold snacks like during one of the breaks. And they had all sorts of stuff there, but like they had like fresh like sugar cookies with like a glaze on it. And I want to say it was $1.25, but it was a absolutely wonderful cookie. And the lady who worked that stand was like the sweetest lady ever. And it was hilarious because no matter what your total came to that you bought, she would always say dollar bill at the end. So it'd be like, say you buy a cookie, right? And she'd say, that'll be $1.25 dollar bill today. And then it was just like the funniest thing. We used to like laugh at that so hard, but like, love those cookies. The other thing I would say in elementary school, I had this weird love of, when it was beef chalupa day, but like they called it a chalupa. It's not like what you would think of like a fast food chalupa now, but it was more like a tortilla boat, and like harder, like a harder tortilla and just filled with like ground beef or whatever. I absolutely loved that cafeteria terrible beef chalupa. It was so good. And like, I don't know why, but like that, I just really enjoyed that. That always stands out to me for some reason.
Well, that one's in the can. We're all done.
I'm going to go and find a beef chalupa somewhere and eat it and like reminisce about elementary school. But yeah, so we'll see where... Man, like, until I said it earlier, it didn't really hit me that we're only like 2 weeks from opening day.
Yeah.
So, good Lord. So next week, we may or may not have a special guest. Don't want to jinx it yet. But we'll talk to you next week. We'll be even closer to opening day. Enjoy watching some baseball, folks. See you then.